Episode 31, Gluttony, Part 1 of the Seven Deadly Sins series. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/strangers. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
This is part one of a special series, The Seven Deadly Sins, in which we periodically will explore one of the seven deadly sins and its accompanying heavenly virtue by taking a look at them in sci-fi and fantasy and in scripture and in our own lives. Part one, Gluttony.
Hello and welcome to the next episode. Wait, what? It's not the next episode, it's the current episode. Hello and welcome back to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, your podcast about sci-fi, fantasy, speculative fiction, Christianity and spirituality and faith matters. I am Ben Avery, and with me, as always, well, not always, but most of always, anyway, is my two co-hosts. Go ahead, co-hosts. See who steps on each other's toes. Who's going to go first?
Well, back once again by popular demand is Dr. Jace.
Hey, wait a minute. I was going to introduce you.
Hey, you can introduce me. I just introduced you.
And back by just a little bit less than unanimous decision is Steve McDonald.
Wow. Is that two votes less than unanimous?
Well, unanimous is two.
You were pretty much the only one that voted for yourself again.
Even I was on the fence.
Today, we are here because we're starting a new series. This series will not be, we're not going to do these one after another. We're going to take a break from between different episodes, but the series of seven. And the series we're doing is about the seven deadly sins and the seven heavenly virtues, as they call them. And we will be talking about them one at a time every once in a while and just how they relate and are related to in science fiction and our life. So... yeah, and we added the heavenly virtues because Dr. Jace requested that we not just...
Well, I just figured that we're... it's great to talk about the deadly sins because it's actually an interesting topic. But I figured instead of just being all negative, it might be good to look at the virtues to see what are the complete opposites of those. Because in most films, you usually see contrast. It's not just everything's horrible. There's usually contrast of some sort.
Yeah, well, and that's how I approach when I write anything. Like when I wrote, I don't know, Armor Quest and the Time Flies series.
But... Ooh. You know, I was just talking with Muse Watson about how many times you promote your books.
Yeah, and did Muse decide that he wanted to read anything of mine? Because
I figured you were gonna get bust me for name dropping again. So
that's true.
I totally set you up for that.
And I totally. Just
swing and a miss.
Yeah, that
swing
was
and a miss.
That was bad. Like this I think is, I actually threw out my shoulder. I missed so hard.
This is Steve's chance to give us a 3-hour monologue about existentialism.
It wouldn't take 3 hours.
it would take 3 hours if you were doing existentialism about the hobbits.
Well, yeah, because you know when you get into it.
Okay, and I'm going to stop us right there. And, that is something when I write, I do look at, okay, well, what kind of character trait do I want to deal with here, and what is the opposite of that, and how can the villain and the hero reflect each other, and just different things like that. But that's another story for, you know, when we talk about maybe how to write and how to develop characters and that kind of thing. That'd be a cool thing to do. But again, at Dr. Jace's request, the first vice that we are going to be tackling today is gluttony.
Ooh.
And I don't know what normally the lists, what order the lists go in, but we're going to start with gluttony. And we're going to talk about what gluttony is, and then we're going to talk about some science fiction examples. Mm-hmm. And... yeah, so let's get started. What is gluttony? Just so we can start here with the definition. What is gluttony?
Gluttony is my family reunion on Thanksgiving, for sure. That's how I would define gluttony. How about you guys?
Steve, you got a definition?
I would say gluttony would be the abuse of the privilege of nourishment.
Interesting. And I would go with something along the lines of the desire to consume more than you are required, and the desire to consume in excess. And gluttony is interesting to me because it's one of the few vices that it has immediate physical ramification.
Mm-hmm.
Once you do it, you know you've done something. and maybe the people around you know too. But gluttony is not just food. It's anything you consume. It could be, drugs are included in gluttony, alcoholism, and those kind of things are all included in gluttony.
Right.
I'm not sure how, sexual activity, if that fits in gluttony.
No, that's under lust.
Well, but is the activity under lust or is the desire under lust? I don't know. So we're not going to talk about that here, though.
Yeah.
For this episode.
Yeah.
That'll be a very special episode of Strangers and Aliens.
I've been thinking about that. It's just we're going to talk about lust. Okay. All right. We'll find a way to do it. And
what are our lists going to look like?
We could have some really long lists with that. There's plenty to go around with that one.
So, all right. So where do you want to go from here?
I want to go first to Dante's Inferno.
Okay.
And just because as soon as we started talking about the seven deadly sins, that was the first thing that popped into mind. Although Steve and I argued off microphone, well, I guess we were on microphone, but off recording pre-show, if Dante's Inferno counts as fantasy. I say it does. I say that Dante's Inferno is a fantasy.
What's his argument?
I'd say that it depends on the individual defining what fantasy is.
Okay.
To me personally, it is a different class than fantasy. But if someone else wants to say, hey, I believe this is fantasy, I'm not going to have a problem with that because I don't think
unless it's me saying that.
Yeah, unless
then
it's you.
Argue.
Well, I tend to take the broader term for our conversations because I think when we talk about sci-fi fantasy, we're pretty much encompassing all imaginative fiction. So we kind of blur, I wish that there was a broader term other than, imaginative fiction, but
speculative fiction.
I don't like that one either.
I do.
But see, I include somewhat, I would include Westerns even in speculative fiction because it is an American fantasy. It's an American mythology kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I love Westerns.
With Dante's Inferno, because of he's not describing a literal truth. He's not like Three Musketeers that takes place in that time and place. It's not beyond that. But Dante's Inferno, he's describing things and imagining things and going far beyond just the teaching of the church at the time and going into imagination. And so with gluttony, you have the third circle of hell. And it's guarded by Cerberus, the three-headed dog. The punishment there for gluttons is that they writhe around in the muck and disgustingness while there's eternal rain falling on them. And they're constantly trying to turn their bodies to find, to get dry. But they can't because there's no shelter. And so some part of their body is always getting rained on. And then they're eating the filth and muck. And I do find it interesting the way Dante gets by Cerberus is he picks up a clump of dirt and throws it into the dog's mouth and the dog eats it, and that's what calms him down, is you give him something to eat. And so Cerberus himself is a glutton, I think.
Wow.
But so Dante's Inferno,
which is just so you know, that book is right next to my chair in my office right now. I'm looking at it.
It's behind me book. Somewhere.
I could look at it if I left this room and went into the other room and then went into the room next to that and then looked up a little bit and then found it on the shelf.
That's very specific, Steve.
It's that close.
You know what? I'm proud of you, Steve. That only took 4 seconds for you to explain.
All right. So,
wow.
Dr. Jace, you don't... So, getting into more recent sci-fi. I want to get this out before anyone gets a chance to.
Oh, come on.
No, you got to do it plenty of times, Dr. Jace, with our last one.
Oh, I know.
I'm getting this out before anyone has a chance to steal this one from me.
Oh, goodness.
Spaceballs, Pizza the Hut.
Yeah.
There it is. The perfect example of gluttony in sci-fi. He ate himself to death because he was so hungry. He had nothing to eat except for the pizza that he was made of.
Mm-hmm.
And what a great picture of gluttony.
That's gross.
Okay, well then I'm going to go with Jabba the Hutt from the Star Wars.
Well, very logical.
Yes, I mean, pretty much the same thing. It was disgusting, and, you know, obviously Pizza the Hutt's funnier, but come on, Jabba is disgusting.
Oh. But the thing is Jabba, is his race like that? I mean, do they just look like slugs, or did he consume enough stuff to make himself as bloated as every time you see a hut, that's what they look like.
But I think it's both. I think they're slug-like, but they just consume. They just eat.
Did you see them eat those little wormy type things?
And yeah, but they were so small. It's like, take two, they're small, Jabba, you know?
Okay, Steve. So, okay.
So Jabba. Pizza the Hut, Jabba the Hut.
Yes, they're the Hut family.
We're out the gate with the Huts.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm going to throw out there, I'm going to go Lord of the Rings, and I'm going to go the Hobbits and their 14 meals. You know, when they were traveling, they're like, what about second breakfast? Does he know about second breakfast? You know,
Levensies?
Yes, Levensies. So I would have to say that Lord of the Rings is a pretty good example of gluttony in films.
Yeah, yeah. And where I would go to with The Hobbit is Smaug. And that's just for Tolkien, the dragons in that world, in Middle Earth, they just want gold.
They just want more.
They just want more, and they want more, and they want more.
Gluttons and, for wealth.
Yeah. Although that might go under greed, but
yeah,
we're gonna. Yeah. I'm gonna blur the lines a little bit here.
So. But it's different. I mean, greed is you want the wealth of it, and gluttony is you want the mass of it. You know, he wanted to fill his lair with this stuff that the humans and the elves and the hobbits or whoever. That they found, you know, that they had some sort of a wealth in. He wasn't going to spend it. He wasn't going to do anything with it. It's just that he was sitting on top of it. No one was going to get it from him.
I think gluttony has a consumer portion to it. It's a consuming mentality. And, greed. I mean, you look at Scrooge. Greed is just, I mean, he didn't spend it. He held it. He just wanted to hunger for money. So I would draw the line in that gluttony is actually a consuming mentality, and that's where I would draw the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I could go there.
With that in mind, I'll give you my second one.
Okay.
I would go with Star Trek First Contact. I would say that the Borg
absolutely
is an analogy for gluttony, because they just want to continue to consume knowledge and civilizations, and they continually, and it is, which I think is the perfect visual for gluttony, is that it is an ever-ending pit. No matter how many people they consume, it's not enough. They have to keep going.
And right under Borg in my list, I wrote zombies, because that same kind of idea.
Yeah.
Where they just.
But what are you going to pick a specific movie or TV show or something?
No, I just wrote down zombies. I could go Walking Dead. You know, we could. Okay, I'll throw out Walking Dead or whatever. But
okay,
you know, they just want to eat you.
Now it's now it's official. Well, then since you went there, I'm going to go with vampires. I mean, let me think here.
That's right under zombies on my list.
Let me think. Let's go.
I'm going to go with Frankenstein's monster then.
No, you're good. Not.
No, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go with Wall-E.
Oh, you took mine.
Ooh, yeah.
Because they go to the spaceship and everyone is basically consuming themselves to death.
Can I tell you how uncomfortable I felt watching Wally with a huge soda and popcorn in my lap?
Well, it was amazing because you don't see that depiction, or if you do see, you know, large people on the screen, usually they're jovial, or, you know, it's pointing out the good aspects of, you know, how...
Or it's really mocking them.
Yeah, or it could be mocking them, but here's something where you're seeing the actual effects of long-term gluttony and just sedentary, satiating gluttony. And these people, that's all they know. I mean, the guy can barely reach the button because he's, you know, he's just so large.
Can I tell you how much I wanted one of those chairs?
And that's during, disturbing.
Especially during football season. I can just kind of go in, go out.
Yeah, but I do look at Wally because of that as a really visionary sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does a good job of portraying a future that draws on a present day reality.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know that I have some friends who just couldn't stand the film because they felt it was purely a political statement about environmentalism and stuff. But I really think that Wally portrays, like, we kind of are getting lazy. And if we continue to get lazy, there's always, you reap what you sow. So what is the end result? If all we're going to do is consume, and the more we consume, the lazier we get. I thought Wally was actually pretty interesting in the fact that, you know, all these people are in this cruise ship, so to speak, and their planet's dead.
Yeah.
And I would argue, too, that it's not that movie is not an environmental agenda, so to speak. Not completely the leftist environmental agendas.
Yeah,
quote unquote.
It's more.
It's actually more about like the virtue of temperance. It's about being responsible with the environment.
Yeah.
Not just don't do anything, don't build anything, don't consume anything. It's using what you got carefully.
From a spiritual perspective, it's being a good steward.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And you know, regardless, you know, there's different views on that, but regardless of your politics, we should all be good stewards. Now, obviously, there's different shades of gray on that whole issue, but you know, like you said, what we're talking about in gluttony is this: we're just going to consume and slowly kill ourselves spiritually, physically, emotionally, everything.
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely.
So, all right, I've got one because I'm just afraid you guys are going to take all mine. Oh wait. No. I was gonna add one because we started talking about vampires, and the specific vampire I'm gonna pick is Nosferatu.
From the movie Nosferatu?
Yeah.
That's a great movie, by the way.
It's freaky. If you've not seen Nosferatu, it's a silent film. It's a silent film, and it's some of the creepiest scenes I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And you only Nosferatu is the vampire, by the way, and you only get to see him for a little bit in the film, but it is all sorts of creepy.
Have you seen Shadow of the Vampire?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
William Dafoe and is it John Malkovich?
All you have to say is William Dafoe.
Yeah,
William Dafoe looks like a vampire.
Well, I think it's John Malkovich. No, William Dafoe plays Nosferatu, right? But
I thought it was John Malkovich.
Well,
but I could be wrong.
One or the other. But the whole idea is, it's been so long since I've seen it, but the whole idea is that that movie about Nosferatu, they're filming this movie about a vampire, but the guy playing Nosferatu actually is a vampire.
Yeah.
And so, like, they're making this movie and discovering that he actually is what he's playing in the movie, and that's why he's able to do it so well.
No, I hadn't seen that, no.
And it's a silent film, right? I mean, it's modern
Shadow
movie,
the Vampire?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Again, it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah.
I saw it right away when it came out on video after it had been in theaters. Right when it came on video, I rented it. And so, I mean, we're talking 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, interesting concept. But yeah, okay, so Nosferatu.
Interesting.
And then,
what about...
You've got to throw in their Dracula as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the whole idea of the vampire is consume, eat, and it doesn't matter.
You're making me hungry.
for what? We're talking about vampires. Consume.
No,
consume.
But you're just saying consume. See, eat. And I'm just kind of like, well, what do
eat,
I got around me?
Eat.
I'm in my chair. It doesn't move like Wally. But...
so Steve, got any more for us?
What about let's go with the phenomenon of the movie world for this year, Hunger Games, yeah. where you have these.
It doesn't count just because the name Hunger's in it.
But it is you a have perfect this, name for when you're talking about gluttony, though.
Yeah, but you have this dynamic where there's these people who live in the special place where, you know, they're watching. They want to watch people fight for their food, basically. And then you have these people in all the other areas who are – they're the ones that have to fight for it. I mean, class warfare at its rawest. And you have –
But the people in the lower class are just – existing to provide for the upper class to consume.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's indicative of, you could say it's sort of how we live in our world in just a more stark expression of it. But, you know, it's the type of thing where you want to notice it. You want to, if you see it, you want to break out of that. You know, when you see, crass consumerism or, you know, advertisements for things that are obviously bad for you, that, you know, that you bet you can't eat just one, you know, stuff like that. And it's just like daring you to eat more or to drink more or to, you know, to do whatever more. You know, it's, I think we want to get away from that. We want to say that's a warning sign. You know, I don't want to eat one. I don't want to eat more than one. I want to eat none, so I don't have to worry about getting into the whole system of eating one and not being able to eat more than one. You know, it's just showing you the, you know, the raw undercurrent of the consumerism in America that is in some places. It's not everywhere, but it's in some places.
All right. How about this one? Dune. When I think of gluttony, I thought about Pizza the Hut. I thought about Jabba the Hut. I thought about Dante's Inferno, and then I thought about Baron. I can't remember his name now.
Harkonnen.
Yeah, from Dune, who just is eating the spice and just disgusting. He's got these pus boils exploding on his face, and he's just getting fatter and fatter. And he has to wear the suit that lets him float through the air because he's so enormous.
Yeah,
and I just go right there when I'm thinking about gluttony. And if I were, you know, a youth pastor and were able to teach, you know, geek church to kids, that I'd bring geek. That one in. That would be one of the sample videos. But
geek church. I think that's a new church.
There is, you know, Hank Harwell started his website Geeklesia.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So my next one is shifting gears a little bit.
All right.
I'm going to go Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, nice.
Augustus Gloop.
Yes, Augustus Gloop. And he just wouldn't stop eating. And there was consequences. And, gentlemen, what was the consequence?
For him? Wasn't he stuck in the tube?
He loses his chance to get it all.
Exactly. There's two things right there. You just said, Ben, the immediate thing is that it makes life more challenging, and he gets stuck, of course, which is painful. And then the long term. And the issue with gluttony is that there's both. There is a short-term issue because, obviously, gain weight, get unhealthy, things happen. And two, you know, it can shorten your life. It can prevent you from being able to do certain things later on in life. I have a friend who had been overweight for a long time, and now their cartilage in their knees is so bad they can't even walk hardly. So wow. So I think that what you guys just said hits on two big issues.
Yeah, and then the gluttony goes to almost all the other guys too.
Pretty much.
You've got the TV kid who's consuming TV. You got the gum girl. I can't remember their names.
Yeah, everybody.
I remember what they were doing, you know.
Yeah, and the blueberry girl.
Blueberry girl. That's what I remember.
That was the gum girl. Yeah.
Yeah, she blew up into a big circle.
Yeah.
Blueberry.
Could you imagine a blueberry that big? I would love to see a blueberry the size of a car.
First movie was freaky. I mean, the makeup for that blueberry, that was scary. It was totally unrealistic, but totally absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, yep. Gene Wilder, man, he was
a creepy man.
He was all sorts of creepy. Now, have you seen the picture on Facebook that they always a picture of Gene Wilder and this crazy stare at a kid, and there's this comment, you know, kind of like, oh, by the way, have you thought about this?
I always want to – the comment I want to put on that picture is, so you're going to turn over your child to someone who quite possibly is a child molester. I mean, just look at me. I do not want to spend time with this person.
Ben, I didn't want to go there, but you went there. Well, that's what that picture is, exactly what that looks like.
Oh my goodness, it's crazy. I mean, the movie itself, I can't find entertaining as a child. I mean, really? When I was a kid, it just was like, okay, this is really bleak and dark and weird.
But you know, the book wasn't meant for that, and that's why.
No, the book is incredible. I loved the book.
From my understanding, the family was not happy with the Disney version, and. You know, because they felt it lightened it up too much, which I thought was interesting because when I saw it as a kid, I'm sitting there, man, that's super creepy and scary. And I hadn't even got past the fact that, you know, there's two sets of grandparents sleeping in the same bed together.
But see, when you were reading that in the book, the two grandparents in the bed, I was okay with it in the book. And I remember my teacher reading that to us in third grade and being like, oh, that's really weird and funny. Ha ha ha. We're all enjoying it. And then you see the movie on TV and I'm just like, this is...
The visual really puts it over the top.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you imagine? sleeping in bed with three other people.
Well, not just three other people. I mean, three other old people who can't get out of bed.
Yeah. I mean,
just the odor alone right there is a problem.
Where you put the bed pans? I mean.
So you went there.
Okay, so my next movie. Wow. My next movie I want to discuss and see what you guys think and can add to the conversation here. Soylent Green.
Yeah.
Where you have a civilization that is so lost that they would turn to, you know, eating people. Sorry if
Spoiler!
I spoiled it for anybody. But, you know, I mean, just that... disgusting reality of, you know, hey, what happens when all the food is gone? What do we eat?
Well, I've not seen it, so thanks for ruining the end for me. But anyway,
he didn't ruin anything. For
no
you.
Problem.
You
anyway,
new.
So it's an old film, so it's okay.
It's like 40
have
years.
Have you seen the Saturday Night Live that they did where Charlton Heston was on and they're doing the sequel to Soylent Green and it's Soylent Red? And he's like, Soylent Green is made of people. And then they do the Soylent Red sequel. Soylent Red is made of Soylent Green. And...
All right. I'm going to go Star Wars. Back to Star Wars. But similar time frame. But I'm going to go with the sand monster in Return of the Jedi.
The Sarlacc.
Yes, the Sarlacc.
1,000 years.
I think that picture of gluttony is it just consumes. It's a desolate consumer, and 1,000 years. I remember as a kid thinking about being digested for 1,000 years. Well, I just remember thinking, how can anything be digested for 1,000 years? Wouldn't you be dead like after what, 50 years?
No, it would take a thousand
or a couple minutes, maybe.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean. Especially, you know, when I was that young, I was thinking, man, wouldn't you be dead after like 10 years? I mean, that's old. So,
well, I think one of the things with the Sarlacc is it has a psychic component that it feeds off of your suffering and off of you being digested.
And it keeps you alive. That's
yeah.
The other thing, none of that's on camera, but
yeah.
That's stuff that like my son has a book that he checks out. Every other month from the library. It's the encyclopedia to Star Wars or something like that.
I'm glad I didn't know that as a kid. That would have kept me up even longer at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a terrifying concept to think of, you know, if it just makes me feel claustrophobic.
But Boba Fett escapes. So
thanks for ruining it for me.
Ruining what for you? A terrible comic book?
Was that Star Wars 68 or something like that? Or was
No, they brought him back in the Marvel Star Wars, and they brought him back in the Dark Horse Star Wars as well. The Marvel Star Wars was awful because he comes back, but he has no memory. And then Han Solo and Leia come across him. They just happen to come across him. And what finally jogs his memory is that he sees Han Solo, but it's when Han Solo is trying to pull him out of a Jawa sandcrawler that is driving toward the Sarlacc pit, and it goes back in. So Boba Fett's now trapped inside a Jawa sandcrawler inside the Sarlacc pit.
That's great.
Oh, it's dumb.
So that's just the answer
even
to
as a
the
kid,
riddle.
When I got that as a kid, I was like, this is dumb. I know this is dumb.
That's the answer to the riddle. What's worse than being trapped in a Sarlacc pit?
Being trapped in a sandcrawler in a Sarlacc pit.
Exactly.
Actually, no, I think I'd rather be in the crawler, don't you think?
Yeah, because you can like build robots and stuff.
Yeah.
Hang out with the Jawas.
Yeah, droid factory.
But they're always stealing your stuff.
Yeah,
hey, I built this robot yesterday. Yes, so, I did. All right.
How many more do you have on your list, guys?
I just have a couple.
I have a few.
I have Demolition Man, but that's just because of the fast food wars, where Taco Bell won the fast food wars, and just the fact that society was able to have a fast food war.
Yeah.
That actually involved fatalities and guns and stuff.
Yeah.
And also Alien. And just the whole Alien concept is just to either kill you or to take you and feed you to its babies.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just nice. About consuming and killing. So, and I have one more. But Steve, what do you got?
Let me see. I have...
Just quickly name off a couple. We can...
Something earlier made me think of the restaurant at the end of the universe, where they've genetically engineered the food to tell you about itself. So they bring you this live animal, and the animal is saying, you know, I've been eating a lot of milk and grain, so you know this part of me is very tender. I think you like that part.
But they've also genetically engineered him to want to be eaten.
Yes.
So that it gets past that whole guilt of eating something and slaughtering something that didn't want to be eaten, but it actually wants you to eat it.
Right, right. Which is, if you think about it, it's just over the top gross.
But Douglas Adams is really good at that.
It's fantastic.
It's that science fiction idea that is just so off kilter that you're just like, how did you think of that? But yeah, okay, that's interesting.
I have two by H.G. Wells. I have The Time Machine, where you know he goes into the future, and basically the Morlocks they use the Eloi for food. And you know, it's another one of those dystopia future type of things where, you know, the human beings are being used for food. But, you know, I guess, you know, H.G. Wells, his logic was that both of these beings had been, they're offshoots of the human race. So, you know, you're having humans eating humans, sort of like a Soylent Green type of thing again, but just a different outcome for the whole thing there. And you know how it turns out is completely different with the time machine and everything. Also, Food of the Gods. I don't know if it's ever been made into a really good movie.
It's been made into a movie, but it's not a good movie.
Yeah, so skip the movie, read the book. But basically there's this substance, Heraclea Forbia 4, and if you eat it and you're still in your growing stage, you will grow incrementally huge. So you have these 40-foot tall children and things like that. And, you know, everything that would encompass 40-foot tall children, you know, from what you would feed them to how you would clothe them and everything. It's a very interesting book. It's not your typical science fiction book. It's more of a, you know, like one science fiction element changes the world in this drastic way and then how that plays out. So it's a very interesting book if you like H.G. Wells or the older type stuff. And it's not like a, you know, spacefaring adventure or something like that. If you like that type of a story, I would encourage you to read that. The last thing on my list was a really interesting one where when I read the book, it really affected me. Because the way that the book was written was interesting, the elements of the book and all that stuff, and I'll get into it a little bit. It was Stephen King's Thinner.
Yeah, okay.
where you have this man who's he's a lawyer. He's a little bit corpulent. And he gets cursed by these gypsies that he won a court case against. And the curse is that he loses weight. Basically, a gypsy just touches his face and says, thinner. And you're like, okay. So he starts to lose weight. And interesting, the numbers of the chapters are his weight. So it starts out at, like, you know, 257 or something like that. And then the next chapter is 253 or whatever. So you're seeing his weight go down as the number of the chapter. You know, it doesn't go incrementally one through whatever.
That's interesting.
It is very interesting. And he really
he gets
feels
on like a 25,000 calorie per day diet and is still losing weight.
Yeah.
And he's still just eating and eating and eating.
Yeah, there's nothing that he can do. And he eventually becomes penitent. He wants to make it up. He wants to do something to, I mean, obviously his life is in danger, but he's now realizing the error that he made. And he goes and he, I'm not going to ruin the ending for anybody. So
yeah,
if you're, if it strikes you as something you want to read, you know, go ahead and do it. But, the gypsies give him something that will take the curse away, but the cost is the type of thing where
it's like a Twilight Zone type of.
Yeah, it's very much like a Twilight Zone, you know,
situation there.
Yeah. So, and, if,
but it, I like it because he's losing the weight, but he can't find satisfaction.
Right.
He just can't satisfy his hunger.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of gets to that idea of this excess and desiring to consume more and more and more, but he's wasting away, and basically he's starving to death, even though he can't get enough food.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, I will go. Do you have another one, Ben?
Let me just before you guys do that, and just give a caveat. If anyone has trouble reading swear words or things that have maybe slightly sexual overtones to it, Thinner does have some of that in there.
It is Stephen King.
Yeah, it's Stephen King. You're getting a Stephen King book, but it's not over the top. But there are elements in there that have things that I would warn a Christian, you know, just to, if you have trouble with that type of stuff, just stay away from it. But otherwise, it's a very interesting examination of the whole thing we're talking about.
Okay, one of the next ones I would go to would be The Matrix, when the Judas character basically says, "I don't care. You can feed me. I don't care if it's fake. I don't care. I want the steak. I want it all to just be. I want to forget about everything." You know, I just think it's such a consumer mentality of, I don't want to look at reality. I don't care what reality really is. I want you to plug me up, and I want to live in a fantasy world, even though I know that it's completely fake.
Yeah, well, and he doesn't even want to know. He doesn't care. Yeah. He knows the reality. He wants to lose the reality.
Yeah.
That's a great example, yeah.
And he's eating a steak while he does it, which is just a great metaphor.
And it made me hungry.
It did.
Yeah. But yeah, well, it's a great metaphor because the steak he's eating is not real.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
But he's enjoying it, and he's...
But it tastes real. It looks real. It smells real, so who cares?
Exactly.
Yep.
All right. Anything else there, Dr. Jace?
I do. I have Batman Returns. The Penguin.
Yeah.
And his fish. It's so disgusting. I can't think of that movie without thinking of him eating the fish guts.
Raw and wriggly.
And actually eating it.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's
In real life, he's eating a raw fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's gross.
All right. Well, I have kind of two more things. One is not a movie, it's not a story, but it is definitely related to sci-fi, and that is the collector mentality that you find in science fiction fans.
Mm-hmm.
And me, I mean, I'm going to throw myself right in there. I want to have it all, you know, and I want to collect it all. When I start reading a series, I want to get the entire series.
The way I like to watch television is I like to watch the whole series all the way through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if I was going to watch Babylon 5, if I ever got the shows, I could watch it all the way through.
If someone loaned you all the shows. Which...
If someone would loan them to me, Ben, anyways.
Too bad there's not like a postal system here in America that you could easily send them.
That's true. You know. That's true. And if I had someone that actually cared about my well-being and and science fiction consumer mentality, then that would enable that gluttony of sci-fi.
Twist the knife.
The point was here.
I don't remember.
The point is,
give me my Babylon 5.
You know, it's not. It's not just the items. It's not just the action figures or the issues of comic books. It is the consuming of episodes and the I find myself when I find something I really like, I just want to watch it, and I'll watch episode after episode, and then I'll realize, oh, it's midnight. It's 1 o'clock. What am I doing? I need to get to bed. So,
well, can I ask? I mean, we've just listed a ton of examples of gluttony, but I'll just be honest. I was trying to find examples of temperance, and I had a hard time finding really good examples of it.
Yeah, I think that's because it's not as exciting, and I think we'll have easier times with other virtues. But yeah, with temperance, I mean, you have things like the Force. In Star Wars, one example of temperance and gluttony is the dark side is, just you and just we're going to take over and we're going to rule. But the light side is to, do nice things and fight nicely, I guess.
I came upon one example. Now, you might think it's a stretch as far as our genre is concerned, but it's Robin Hood, the BBC version. And the reason why I include it is because no one is that good of an archer and fighter and anything like that. It basically it's Green Arrow or Hawkeye. So so I that's how I get my foot in the door. But one thing I like is Robin Hood comes home and he's got food in his home stored up, but all these people are starving. So he makes kind of an order, an edict that nobody eats until these other people who've been starving eats first. And I thought that was when his servant, who is the funny character, is kind of like, what that includes me too. And it's kind of an offsetting. So that's an example of temperance.
Okay. Yeah.
But wow. You guys are it seems so underwhelmed.
Well, I haven't seen the show.
Yeah. And I mean, having someone as that's their, I mean, that's their virtue. Temperance.
I do have an example, though. I just thought of this.
What's that?
Tony Stark, Iron Man. The whole demon in a bottle thing where he became an alcoholic and was consumed with his alcoholism and had to claw his way out from that and overcome the actual vice of alcoholism. And
yeah, but then his gluttony for electronics and fame and everything else, that he just substituted.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's temperate as far as alcohol goes now.
Well, there you go. That's great.
And the movie,
temperate to cereal and just not be temperate towards T-bone steaks.
All right, I have one last thing. We're going to do this, I think, with all of our vices and virtues. And I think we actually might do this again, but we're going to open up the Book of Lewis right now. I'm going to open this. I got this huge book here, and I'm looking at Screwtape Letters right now. And in letter 17 of Screwtape Letters is about gluttony.
Yeah.
And he says this. He says, "My dear Wormwood, it is the contemptuous way My dear Wormwood, the contemptuous way in which you spoke of gluttony as a mean of catching souls in your last letter only shows your ignorance. One of the great achievements of the last 100 years has been to deaden the human conscience on that subject, so that by now you will hardly find a sermon preached or a conscience troubled about it in the whole length of breadth of Europe." And then he talks about the guy, Screwtape's assigned to a single person, but there's another demon called Glubos, who is assigned to the guy's mother. He's talking about her version of gluttony. "She is always turning from what has been offered her to say with a demure little sigh and a smile, 'Oh, please, please, all I want is a cup of tea, weak, but not too weak, and the teeniest, weeniest bit of really crisp toast.' You see, because what she wants is smaller and less costly than what has been set before her, she never recognizes as gluttony her determination to get what she wants, however troublesome it might be to others. At the very moment of indulging her appetite, she believes that she is practicing temperance. Skip a little bit here. The real value of the quiet, unobtrusive work which Glubos has been doing for years on this old woman can be gauged by the way in which her belly now dominates her whole life. The woman is in a what may be called the all-I-want state of mind. All she wants is a cup of tea properly made, or an egg properly boiled, or a slice of bread properly toasted. And there's a lot more in this than just these selections that I read here. But
I've got a perfect example of a sci-fi example of false temperance.
Okay.
All right. Serenity. In the movie Serenity, the main villain who's trying to bring to justice, he thinks he's this very orderly, structured, very controlled person, and he views order and temperance as this ideal, but he learns that it's actually a perversion, that what he has fought for, what he has believed, what he has stood for is actually actually a lie. And so he represents, to me, when I see him, I think of someone who is trying to bring, trying to exude a temperance, but in reality it's something very distorted.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so we got some sci-fi temperance. Not a lot, but we got some. So, all right, so let's get real, guys. What's this mean? We're talking about gluttony, but what does it mean for us here now in the here and now, and not just in the, you know, Star Wars universe?
Gluttony equals bad.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
I'm doubly profound. Impressed.
Yeah, it's profound.
It was short.
I can elaborate.
No.
So here's what I've got. I found some verses in the Bible that directly address this, and one of them made me laugh really hard. Not this one, the next one. But this is Proverbs 23:19, 20, and 21. It says, "Listen, my son, and be wise, and set your heart on the right path. Do not join those who drink too much wine or gorge themselves on meat. For drunkards and gluttons become poor, and drowsiness clothes them in rags." That was a nice one. Here's the one I like. Proverbs 23:1-2. "When you sit down to dine with a ruler, note well what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you are given to gluttony."
That's pretty intense.
Yeah. Here we have in 2 Peter 1, verse 5 and 6 says, "For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness knowledge, and to knowledge self-control, and to self-control perseverance, and to perseverance godliness, and to godliness mutual affection, and to mutual affection love." And I just like how self-control, which is basically temperance in a lot of ways, is in that list of just these things that you should be adding to your faith. Like, this is not just something you do. You know, you don't just believe in God, but it's a life-changing thing, and it's a part of just the life as a Christian is to have self-control,
right,
and not
yeah.
to consume the gifts that God has given you, to enjoy them, yes, to use them, yes, but not to consume them to excess. And here's a verse that I have found very, very, very helpful to me. I mean, let's just face it. We've gone through this whole conversation without actually talking about our own selves too much. I would consider gluttony as one of the sins or one of the problems that I really have. I love a nice big burger. I love French fries more than I should. I love
if you keep talking,
popcorn.
I'm gonna have a problem with it.
And
I'm gonna
chocolate,
make some French fries while you guys
chocolate,
talk.
My goodness, I've actually this week decided I'm not going to eat French fries. I don't know how long. I'm at least gonna go a month without it. But just to do it, just because I can, and just to prove to myself, you know, I can, you know, take these baby steps towards a healthier lifestyle. So French fries, I'm giving up. I can't give up popcorn though.
Popcorn, if you don't put butter and salt on it, is actually not bad for you at all.
And actually, even with a little bit of butter and salt, it's not too bad for you.
And actually, with a lot of butter, it's really good.
And it's really bad for you. But
you know, our to talk about how this applies to our personal lives, I think. To be honest, in our culture, and let's be honest, we don't do anything in moderation in America.
No.
Nothing in moderation. Everything's excess. I mean, if you've ever Google it, what is the average amount of food a person can get by on in a day, and look at the amount of food, what it looks like, and then sit there and think, oh my word, how could anybody survive on that? Yeah. It just goes to show how far we've gotten and what we think we need to eat.
Well, and even beyond that is this idea that when we're talking about this gluttony from these ancient texts like the Bible and Dante's Inferno, they didn't imagine anything like this when they were talking about gluttony. What the poorest American can gorge themselves to death if they wanted to money.
I wouldn't say the poorest, but many of those who are, because when we're out in California, you're right in the fact that you can get tons of crappy food for really cheap. But some people obviously even have less than that.
But you know what I mean, though.
Yeah. I know what you mean. And that's the thing. I was just at a prayer meeting on Wednesday, and someone prayed, you know, how do we live in a country where a bag of carrots is more expensive than potato chips? You know, where you have to actually make potato chips, and carrots are more natural. But I think the way to combat it, if we're talking about applying it to our lives, which I take that to interpret to mean, what do we do about it? What can we practically do about it? And I think the quickest way to really seek the Lord and instill temperance and fight against gluttony is by fasting.
Yep, prayer and fast.
I think by prayer fast, and if you're one of those people that, you know, well, I can't, there's different types of fasts. You've got the kind of fast where you don't eat anything and just water. You've got juice fasts or liquid fasts where you can get juices and maybe even milk and different things like that, where you just do liquids. And if you're one of those people that go, my gosh, I've never done that before, I don't know what to do, there's what you call a Daniel fast, which the Daniel fast is still allows you to eat, but you only eat certain types of food for a period of time. Now, our church did it together for 21 days. And actually, when Ben and I were at the conference this year, I was on the Daniel fast. So while everyone else was eating desserts and stuff, I was eating like brown rice and vegetables. So our whole church was doing that as a group, and it's a very reasonable fast for those of you that have never done it before. And you know what? You feel so much better when it's all over with. I'll tell you right now, Ben, I struggle. I used to love fried foods, but after doing a couple different things like that, I just can't. It's hard for me. I actually start to get nauseous thinking about eating fried foods.
I've been really starting to get much more health conscious and just trying to actually do the exercise thing and do the temperance and eating thing. And one thing that I did from a book called I can't remember the title now. It's like Losing Weight God's Way or something. One of those kind of things. I met the author. He's actually Kim Kardashian's cousin, and he's
6 degrees of separation.
Yeah, it was interesting. He came to Mishawaka here in Indiana and was doing a signing at our Borders bookstore. And he was the only person sitting at the table there with his books, and no one was coming to him to talk to him. And so I went over and I was like, this looks interesting, and talked to him about it. But his book has this whole idea of this, it's a fruit fast where for 1 week you eat only fruit. And you start out the first 2 days, I shouldn't say only fruit, but the first 2 days you're eating like a single fruit, and that is it. You choose one, you stick with it. And then after that, you know, for a couple of days, you're eating all kinds of fruit. And then for the last couple of days of that week, you can put in some fish in your diet there, like a thing of fish, which is it was hard, but I did it, you know.
Yeah.
And one of the verses that he talks about in that book, actually, and this is why I bring this up, it's from 1 Corinthians 10. 10:5, and it says, "We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ." And that's something that I've kind of looked at and said, okay, when I'm thinking about food, especially right now, because I got off the beaten track there this summer because we were out doing all these different camps, and when you're at camps, you just eat what's put in front of you, you know. Right. Whether it's tasty or not, and whether it's good for you or not, but you know, we basically had 6 weeks of that kind of eating in a row, from Gideon to the camp to the other camp and that kind of thing. And so coming off of the summer, my wife and I were both like, okay, we've got to get this under control. We've got to, you know, and this is one of those things where you just this idea, you take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. And so, yeah, I mean,
it's one of those things that it just doesn't happen. People think that, well, just the truth is it's not going to happen unless we're intentional about it. At least for me, when I think about it, whenever I'm intentional, whether it be through fasting or through working out or through some kind of diet or whatever, I have to be intentional about it. And when I'm intentional, I do really, really well. It's when, you know, I'm not thinking about, when I don't plan ahead, because then, you know, life gets busy and you just kind of go with what's simple or easy or cheap, convenient. Yeah. And so in our culture, that's just the way things are wired. You can go and spend for $2 or $3 and go get a feast at Taco Bell. But it's
and that's part of the whole French fry thing with me, is that this kind of makes it so I'm not just stopping off on my way from one place to another and grabbing a bite to eat, you know, grabbing my lunch at McDonald's.
Do you know what is a good substitute for French fries? I mean, I don't know if
onion rings.
No.
That's right. I've given up French fries for onion rings.
Steve, you're what we call an enabler. You make it worse.
No, he's even more devious than that.
No. Is sweet potato fries.
Well, I've not tried those, so I don't know anything about how that
they're good.
How they stack up. But are they still fried?
No. No, you bake them. And
okay. So you're making them.
You can actually cut them up as if they're in the shapes of fries, or you can slice them as if they're like, you know, like you would when you make potatoes for breakfast, in circles. You know what I'm talking about? When you fry, when you chop up and fry potatoes and they're in circles, whatever, you can do it that way too. They're kind of like chips. If you cook them long enough and get them a little bit singy, they taste, and let them cool down, they taste like chips. So
interesting.
They're much healthier for you.
What I've done actually is I've stopped, because I go and work places outside of the home when I'm writing. Like, I'm working on this devotional book right now, and I went actually to the our local grocery store that has a cafe, and I was able to buy like an apple and some carrots and that kind of thing, and just sit down and eat that for my lunch. And that was kind of fun, and that's the way I kind of plan on doing things. But I have thought about, you know, it'd be interesting to do like a, you know, Strangers and Aliens weight loss challenge or something like that.
That'd be cool.
They're kind of fun.
Only if we would have started I've already lost
before you started your fast.
Yeah. So, but I'll tell
you, our church office, they did a last year or 2 years ago, they did a Biggest Loser competition, and the youth pastor, he before they started, he went and gained a bunch of weight on purpose because he was already pretty fit. He's like, I can't compete. So,
again, look into the Daniel's fast, because you can eat all the fruit you want. If you can get good whole grains, you can actually get good food. So you're not starving yourself, and it's good stuff. But it's a good for those who have never done it, who are interested to make a difference. That's a good starting point.
All right. Well, that was a good starting point, and I think we've come to a good stopping point. So thank you very much, guys, and thanks for listening, everyone else. And you guys want to give any final words? We didn't plug our Audible account.
Moderation in all things.
That's true. So we'll do that next time.
I would watch Babylon 5, but I can't.
That's what you're going out on.
Ben is moderating your watching of it. See? Moderation in all things.
I've got the box. It's right there.
It's been right there for a year.
No, literally. It's been there for a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Tough love.
Oh, well.
I don't know what I would call it, but not tough love.
abstinence or something.
What?
Steve, I have no idea what you're... I was about to say, Steve, I think you need a hug, but when you said that, I'm not hugging you to save your life. Sorry.
Hey, it's late. I got a coughing baby.
Oy. All right. Well, thanks for listening, and Godspeed.
You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery
Dr. Jace O'Neill, and Steve McDonald. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. We invite you to join the conversation by visiting our website, www.strangersandaliens.com, where you'll find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also follow us on Twitter, where we are at Strange and Alien, or like us on our Facebook page. If you'd like to email us directly, our email is podcast@strangersandaliens.com. And once again, thanks for listening.
Do you know what is a good substitute for French fries? I mean, I don't know if...
Onion rings.
No.
That's right. I've given up French fries for onion rings.